Golf Smarter number 636. The club face position is more important than the swing path when correcting your ball flight issues with Rob LeBritz.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Rob.
Fred, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for reaching out and coming back on the show. It's been a long time since you were on Golf Smarter.
I think it's probably been like 8 years or something like that.
Yeah, the episode number 277 back in April of 2011. It was a long time ago. But you, this is how far advanced you were. We were announcing something where people, this new concept of giving lessons online, right?
Oh, yeah. I remember that. We were giving lessons live one-on-one with your instructor at the time.
Amazing.
I know, and now it seems like such easy things to do when you're talking on the phone, and all of a sudden you just put yourself on FaceTime.
Hey, do you give people lessons online? Are you still doing
sometimes
that?
Sometimes I do. Yeah, there's people will send me videos, and especially in the winter months when they're playing down in Florida, and they don't have access to me.
Oh, so you probably is your club? You're at Glen Arbor. Is it a country club or is it public?
It's a private golf club only, yeah. So it's Glen Arbor Golf Club. We're situated about 45 minutes north of Manhattan.
Okay. And that's in what neighborhood?
We're in Westchester County in Bedford Hills, New York.
Okay. You see some good golfers coming through there, I'm sure.
Yeah, you get your Johnson Wagners and you get your Andrew Svobodas and some tour players and you get your Keegan Bradleys. So it's nice. We got a really good group of people coming through here.
That's awesome. And then then the winter months, they disappear and you go into hibernation. What happens in the winter months for you? How you do that?
So we have in indoor, we were the first ones basically in the Northeast here to build an indoor outdoor teaching facility.
Wow.
So we built two bays in 2000 end of 1999. And they've been great. They've been going strong now for 18 years and we've had technology. We've added all sorts of, you know, TrackMan and MySwing and 3D motion capture and SAM putting lab. So we keep really busy in the winter because we've learned how to optimize your performance, you know, especially staying up north in the winter.
I advocate all the time for people to get fitted for golf clubs, but we've never talked about people getting fitted for putters. And whenever I think it feels like when I go into a clubhouse or a retail outlet or something, and I said, can I get some help looking at a putter? They're like, whatever feels good for you is probably the best thing. Is that true?
Well, I mean, what feels good for you is maybe somewhat fit to you. Maybe it's the right length you like, or maybe it's the who knows. But to be fit perfectly with a putter, it's a process. It takes a little bit of time, and you should definitely do it because when you find, you know, the perfect setup where you're nice and balanced, we know that ball's not moving, so you have to be very stationary and still. And when you're putting on greens that are very fast, and if you have any sort of movement and you're not stationary, it's going to result in bad putting. So, you want to make sure that you're just good and solid just over any stroke, really. So make sure you get fit for that putter where your balance is really, really solid from heel to toe.
So your putting motion is basically your putting motion. It's not like, you know, changing your swing or making those kind of adjustments. So you fit the putter to your swing. Is that how that were your stroke?
Sure. Within parameters. I mean, you know, you want your eyes basically over the ball. You want your arms hanging naturally. And you want your body balanced from heel to toe. And when I say heel to toe, that really means heel to toe. It doesn't mean, you know, left to right. And then you can work on how much weight you want to put on your left side or your right side, depending on what type of stroke you're making and where your ball is.
Definitely worth considering. So coming out of winter and now the spring has sprung, we're all feeling good about the weather now. We're finally getting back out and sneezing a lot and getting to play more golf and the practicing after a long hibernation. What do you have as far as your students come to you with at this time of year and say, ah, boy, I got to get started again here. I need some help with fill in the blank. What do you get most of the time?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, most of my students actually, you know, they're not taking long rests. You know, they're working on their game, you know, throughout the year, and they're traveling, and, you know, we work on it constantly every week, whatever they're doing, if they have to travel. But if I do come across a student who's been idle for the winter, and they come out in the spring, you know, the first thing you want to do is make sure their body is ready to go and actually, you know, make some golf swings or actually do some motion, for golf. If that's not the case, or even if it is the case, I still like to start people, you know, from the hole and work them outward, you know, when they first come back from a long winter's nap. So you might, you know, start with putting, keeping their body really still, get them working on their speed control a little bit, and then work out to chipping, you know, and hit some chip shots and find your speed control and how hard you're hitting the shots with limited motion, and then work your way out to, you know, to pitching. So now the balls are getting a little farther. The body motion's going to be, you know, it's going to be used a little bit more. And then you get out to the full swing where the body's going to be used and supporting, you know, the pretty fast swing motion of the club. But you want to work your way out that way, especially, and do it over time. You don't have to get it all in one day. You can start with, you know, putting and chipping one day, and then the next day come out and do, you know, putting, chipping, and pitching. You know, mix it up. Don't feel like you're in a rush to get your game back in shape, because it takes time.
Are the better players the ones who take more lessons? I mean, it's like, I'm thinking about, you know, somebody who's like, oh, I've got a golf tournament coming up this weekend. I got to take a lesson and, you know, fix my game. But yet they don't take a lesson all year long, and they play once a month at best, right? But they got the charity tournament and they want to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the guys who are, you know, single digit handicap and are constantly fine tuning, tweaking. And are they seeking out help all the time too, or do lessons just screw people up all the time, no matter what happens?
Well, it depends. If you're taking lessons from an instructor who doesn't know what they're doing, then yes, you're going to get messed up. But, you know, there's all different walks of life. It's great. I mean, you talk to Bubba Watson, right? Bubba's never taken a lesson in his life. So here's a guy who's, you know, won a couple of masters. He's never taken a lesson. I have students of all walks of life. So, you know, I have students that like to have their, what I call their handheld, so to speak, where they'll take, you know, multiple lessons a month, you know, maybe sometimes even twice a week. You know, I look at everybody's game as like a business and a building. You know, there's the business has got to be firing on all cylinders, right? And if there's a part of the business that's not, you know, putting out its weight, you got to fix that part. So we want to make sure that all of the, you know, the people's or the students' games are firing on all their cylinders. They're putting, they're chipping, they're pitching, their bunker play, their full swing, their emotional skills, they're, you know, all across the gamut. So, you know, when you first come back, if you're taking a long break, you're kind of behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
You know, in those times, you've got to find yourself in a month, you know, hit a bucket of balls once a week, pitch and chip a bucket of balls once a week. I mean, do something that's going to keep your hand-eye coordination and everything, you know, there, so to speak.
Do you believe in muscle memory?
Muscle memory?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I haven't met many muscles with brains in them, but I do believe in I do believe in the way people are patterned in their brains and how they pattern themselves. You know, that's sort of kind of, you know, when people pattern certain ways, they get. You know, they get stuck in those ways. They've patterned them. They've practiced that way. So when you're trying to alter those patterns, that's what, you know, instructors do. They try to change things or alter those patterns. You have to do that in a very specific way to make those alterations.
Hmm. You mentioned emotional skills.
Yes.
When you listed all the, you know, the short game, long game, putting, chipping, all that, and you kind of snuck in emotional skills in there. Let's go over that for a little bit, because that's the stuff that really intrigues me. It's not a mental game; it's an emotional game, and that's where.
Yes.
I mean, I was watching the Masters this year. You could tell John Rahm towards the end there when he put that ball in the water. You can kind of see that he lost it for the rest of the round.
Yes. Yes. You could see even when Sergio hit all those balls.
I didn't want to bring that one up.
Well, you know, it's just one of those things where he kept on saying, how many times can I hit a great shot? Well, I mean, it may have been a shot that was just past the flag, but it wasn't a great shot. It had too much spin. It spun in the water. So it was the wrong type of shot that he was trying to hit over and over. But, you know, anyway, the emotional skills part of it is, you know, people say when they first come out of the winter, too, they're like, well, I'm nervous about playing golf. Well, sure you are. You haven't been on a golf course in a while. There's your emotional skills, right? So what do you want to do to calm those emotional skills? Maybe get out there and play a few holes with your pro, you know, before you have that first game with your people. So you've actually practiced, you know, so then you'll be a little bit more confident and ready to go and play that first round. But there's also emotional skills when you get on the golf course where, you know, if you hit a bad shot, you know, you're playing great and all of a sudden hit one bad shot and you're really upset over a bad shot. I mean, come on, you're going to hit bad shots.
Yeah.
It takes the body a long time to come down from you getting all those chemicals mixed up in your body when you're getting all upset. It takes like, you know, what, 6 to 8 minutes or something like that for your body to calm itself down.
Mm. Or count to 10.
Yeah, right?
And so where do emotional and mental game, where do they intertwine? Where do they come together?
Well, emotional, mental, I think they're, you know, you got to basically find a way to keep your emotions in check. And that's part of your mental game. You know, the mental game is how you handle yourself out there, how you're thinking, you know, what you're thinking about before your shot. What are you thinking about after? Heck, what are you thinking about in between your shots? Hopefully not much. You know, you've got to give your brain time to rest while you're out there as well. So, you know, figuring out that, you know, what that sweet spot is, finding out where you play the best. That's why you got, you know, I preach having a coach because they're the ones that are going to help you through all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then, so that means, I guess we can assume then that course management and or strategy, and the emotional or mental game aren't really the same thing, although people kind of lump the mental game and course management together frequently.
Well, let's say here's a perfect example. Let's say you're 5 under par and you're going into your 12th hole. You're playing pretty good. And you come to a tight par 5 and you pull
out. 5 under par and you're playing pretty good?
Let's say you're playing the greatest. How's that? You're 5 under par and you're playing the greatest.
I'm freaking out. If I'm playing 5 under par, no matter where I am in the round, I'm freaking out. I'm trying not to say to myself, you're 5 under par.
So here's the perfect example. Now, you say that. How many times have you been at 5 under par? Ever? Have you ever been 5 under par?
No.
Okay, so no. So if you've never been 5 under par, you're going to freak out. But the key is to understand, you know, first of all, what got you there, and to understand that you are in a freak out situation and not to freak out. That's where the mental game comes into play, right?
Mm-hmm. Keep going. I'm listening,
okay, so
coach.
Let's say you're 5 under. You come into a hole and it's a dog leg left and it's a par 5 and there's water all down the left-hand side. And you get up there and you rip a ball and you hit it into the water. Okay? And you're 5 under par. Mm-hmm. What do you do? What are you thinking to yourself?
Take as few shots as I can to finish this hole.
Okay, which is a smart way to think about it, right? Most people would say, oh my God, you know, my round's done. I just made a mistake. And they'd get all upset. And that's, again, right, where the emotional skills come in. You've got to not beat yourself up for hitting a bad shot. And you got to get up there and you got to tee it up and you got to hit it down the middle again, right? So, because you have to get it down there.
Right.
If you freak out, you're not going to get it down there. And then it's going to get worse and snowball. And then you're going to get more freaked out and it's going to become a whole snowball of you not controlling your emotions.
And what is your body doing physically when you start freaking out like that, that then all of a sudden all these bad shots start coming? What is it that your body's responding to? How is it responding?
I think your body's going through a fight or flight sometimes. You know, your adrenaline gets going. You get confused. If you get upset, all of a sudden, you know, all the chemicals that go along with all these reactions that you have in your body are starting to fire in your brain. And that's what gets your body getting all shaking. Your endorphins fire. You get all shaky and you get nervous and your brain starts to race. All that stuff is, you know, it's natural, okay? But that's what's happening, you know, chemically in your body. So those are what you're feeling. And that's why if you let yourself kind of go down that road of getting, you know, really upset or finding yourself, you know, getting nervous or shaking, you know, calm it all down. Step back. Take a couple deep breaths, okay? It's mm-hmm. not the end of the world. There's crazier things going on in the world than you hitting a ball into the water on number 12, right?
Yeah.
So let's take a deep breath and then focus on what we need to do, which is hit another ball down the middle.
Yeah. You talk about fight or flight. Well, Michael Jackson was a lover, not a fighter. And talk about flight. We're going to take off right now. We'll be back after a word from somebody who wants to take care of us. All right, let's start picking apart some shots that would cause us to freak out, you know, because the ball is going in the water. A big old nasty hook. What do you think is the generally what's the problem and how can we address that?
Okay, your face is closed. It's hitting the golf ball and it's closed, so it's going left. Okay.
Yeah.
So what do we have to do? We have to make sure that face isn't closed at impact. You know, check your setup. Make sure your setup is fine. Always go to the setup and the grip first. The ball could be getting, you know, wherever it's getting to your setup could be your spine could be tilting towards a target. Your ball could be in the wrong position. There's a million things. But the bottom line is when you're hooking the ball, the face is closed. And from the 27 years now I've been coaching, the main thing that I've seen, which people do immediately when they first grip a golf club is when they put the golf grip on there a little bit too strong. Or their left hand for right-handed golfers on there a little bit too clockwise. What it does is it sets the club in a closed position before you've even taken the club back. And then what we have to do is we have to try to return it to open or squarer, okay, with a closed grip as we're striking the ball. So that's the biggest thing that I've seen over my 27 years of doing this. You know, what I do with people now is I really teach them how to swing the golf club and, you know, to try to teach them what it feels like to just kind of swing the club with a nice neutral grip to kind of feel what the face is doing. When the grip is on there really strong or closed, the club feels a little bit differently than it does when your grip is on there neutral to almost weak. The club is going to feel differently going back. It's going to feel differently in your hand. It's going to feel weighted differently. So people usually freak out when they go from a closed grip to a more neutral grip because the club doesn't feel right in their hand. They immediately feel like it's going to go way to the right when they neutralize their grip or weaken it.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend that I play with who doesn't get a lot of playing time. He would love more, but just work, family, the whole thing gets in the way. But his setup, he closes the club head, and I'm not sure what it's doing at impact, but he closes the club head at setup because he's playing his, fade. He's playing his slice, right? And so he's trying to get it into the fairway. So he just closes it and he feels like it's going to spin properly to get the ball going left to right after contact for a right-handed golfer. What do I tell him? I mean, say nothing. Say absolutely nothing. I know that. But
yeah, sounds like he's pretty far from neutral or kind of like what a neutral setup would look like. You know, so people who are far from neutral have a really hard time feeling, you know, little things or when you're trying to change them or it feels so awkward to them when you first try to change them that it almost freaks them out. But what do you tell him? I mean, you tell him to go seek some professional instruction
and pay attention.
What's that?
And pay attention to do what the guy's
exactly.
saying.
Exactly. I mean, you know, give me his number. Give me a couple of videos. I'll help him.
How many, when we go take an hour lesson, half hour is useless and hour and a half is too much. When we go take an hour long lesson, how many takeaways should we be trying to get in 1 hour session? And is there overload? Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends on, you know, here's the funny part. You said, you know, hour and a half is too much. I mean, I have my students when they first come in, first time I see them, it's a minimum hour and a half. But my lessons, you know, they're not standing on the range fixing your golf swing. The first thing I do is after I do the, you know, the first screening of your body, is, you know, I take you out on the golf course, see how you play.
Okay.
You know, you're out there for, you know, 4 or 5 holes with me and you're out there playing. So I get a good idea what's going on right away. And then I can make my adjustments from there. And it usually takes a different route, my lessons again when they're spring, summer, fall. I'll meet them at my teaching facility. They're already warmed up, and they're hopping in my cart. We're going to our 7-acre short game facility, or we're going on the golf course.
I think that most people don't even take playing lessons. And to me, it's always made sense that that's going to be a lot more valuable than doing a range lesson, just working on your swing. It's fascinating that you start with the playing lesson. Are you giving instruction while you're doing the play, or is it just observation?
Yeah, mostly observation. I might give them, you know, if I see something that's really bad or whatever, I might get a glaring mistake. I might give them, have to fix it sort of thing. And it'll usually make them better right away so that, you know, they understand what we're going to go through. But, generally it's just observing and gathering all the data, seeing how they handle themselves. I don't want to get in their head right away. I want to see how they react to the shots. I want to see how they react to a bad one or to a good one or whatever. I'm not trying to get too into it at that point.
Oh, so when you're out on the course with them, it's not necessarily doing swing mechanics. You're watching course management. You're watching emotional skills, mental skills, right?
Oh God, all of it, especially the first one. You know, once I understand what a player's all about, then you know you take them out the next time or whatever you need to work on. I mean, the next lesson might have to be a range lesson. You never know, but mostly it's not. Not that case, unless they have a glaring issue, that needs to be fixed and addressed. If they can't hit it, so to speak, if they can't hit it, no sense going out on the golf course. But that person doesn't need the golf course lesson. They need to learn how to make contact.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, you're going to start them, but you generally start them closer to the green. So you're going to start them with chipping and pitching. You're not going to go for a person who can't hit the ball. You're not going to make them make full swings and try to hit it. It just doesn't make sense. Right. It's like saying, okay, I'm a runner. I ran in high school. I'm 47. I'm going to go run this marathon next week. So I ran 1 mile today. I'm ready to go 25 miles tomorrow. No, it doesn't work that way.
Oh, it doesn't? You know? Oh, okay. Well, then I'll forget that idea. All right. We've done the hook. Now I have a terrible slice. What are you thinking immediately that needs some help?
So, you know, you look first, see where they're aimed, and you know the face is open. Obviously, if it's slicing, it's not closing. And the more it's slicing, the more it's staying open. So, you know, you got to get people to just feel what it feels like to allow the club to come down and start to close or rotate. You know, slicers, they're not letting that happen at the ball. Okay, the face is open. They're not letting the face or the toe swing closed. So you got to learn what that feels like. A couple good drills you could do, impact bag, where you're making some half swings or three quarter swings with like 20% of your power, but you're allowing the toe of the club to hit the bag first rather than the heel of the club or the club face squarely. So you want the toe of the club to really teach them how to rotate their arms through a little bit more, let that club swing through. Slices are real easy to cure. Very simple.
Strangely enough, I think the club that I have the most confidence in when I'm playing is my driver, which is kind of crazy.
But have the most time to make adjustments to hit it, you know, and you're probably a pretty good athlete, Fred. I would, you know, so you're going to have the time to hit it. It's on a tee. It's on a nice lie every time. So, you
okay.
know.
All right, but if anything, my errors that happen, it's the ball just doesn't. It's not. I'm right-handed. It doesn't just slice. It just goes on a straight line to the right. You know, maybe at about 30. So is this a case of me lifting my head, not following through? I mean, where would you think would be something? It's like, okay, I hit the ball straight pretty much most of the time, but occasionally it just goes over there at about 40 to 45.
Again, it's just a probably club face issue. You know, mm-hmm. you always want to go to the club face first because the club face is more important than the path and all that stuff. But the club face first, the club face is definitely open. And then next you might want to say to yourself, well, it started way right. If it started way right and kind of just went right and kind of stayed there, you know, the path could be coming, the club could be a little behind you or coming in a little flat or a little under the plane line or whatever you want to call it, you know, coming in from the inside a little too much and the face is square to that path because it went straight, but it didn't cut, right? So, you know, you can just check, feel like you're, when you start down, that you're getting the club face a little bit closed a little earlier. It's like from the top of your swing. See if that doesn't fix it right away.
When you say club face is more important than the path, you meant the swing path, your swing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the club face is more important than the path, definitely.
And that's, and how do you recognize that? Are you looking at your ball flight going, oh, shoot. You know, I mean, it's like, does your ball flight tell you a lot on what your club face is doing?
Yeah, I know the ball flight, the club face on an iron has 75% the effect of the ball flight for an iron hit. So you hit an iron, has a 75, the club face itself has a 75% effect on the flight of the golf ball, which means where it takes off and where it curves to. The path and the shaft or whatever has 25%. And up, when it goes up to an iron or a wood, I think a wood has 85% effect, the wood face has 85% effect of the ball. And then it's 15% path and shaft, if I'm not mistaken. I might be off with a couple percentage, but it's pretty close to that. So you always want to go to club face first. People have been teaching path for years, and, you know, club face is more important. It's like teaching line and speed and putting. You know, what's more important? You know, your speed is way more important than your line. I'm sorry. Okay, it just is.
You're a heretic. What's the best shot in your bag? Or I should ask, are you playing golf much anymore as a teacher?
I do. Okay. Well, listen, I'm a director of golf, but I played in the PGA Championship in 2016.
Awesome.
Played in five majors, and I won player of the year in the Met section year before last. So, yes, I still compete very high, still win tournaments every year. So I still keep my game very sharp.
Good for you.
That being, a lot of time. I've got the greatest wife and family on the planet. They get it because they see the dedication. But I've become pretty proficient with my wedges. I'm kind of known, my ball striking is very good. It's always has been, but I'm getting better with my wedges now. So, that's probably ball striking and wedges. We're still trying to figure out the putting.
We're always trying to figure out the putting. How many wedges do you carry?
I'm very simple. Right now, it's funny that you asked that question. I have a pitching wedge. I have a 52 degree and I have a 58 degree Vokey. And today I just ordered a 50 and a 56. So I'm going to be messing around with which wedges I play. But for the past 5 years, I've only carried three wedges.
Really?
And including a pitching wedge.
Yeah. And so what's the distance difference between each of your wedges?
So I don't go that way. I don't worry about full swing distance between the wedges because I become proficient with every length of swing with every wedge.
Mm-hmm.
So from, you know, quarter, half, three quarter, whatever it is with all the wedges. So I become proficient with mostly, you know, trajectory and how far now. There's not a lot of guesswork going on the wedges, which is nice.
Yeah. So then why don't you share with us, forget everyone else, share with me, tell me, what are your favorite short game drills and practicing when you go out and practice? What are you doing with each of your three wedges? How many? Okay, I want to know what's all in your bag. If you're only carrying three wedges, what's on the other side of it? I'm asking too many questions
driver,
at once.
Driver three wood and two hybrids.
Okay.
I've got a 19 and 22 degree hybrid, and then I carry a 4 through pitching, all Titleist, all straight through, been for years, and a 52 degree kind of in between wedge and a 58 degree my lob wedge, so to speak.
Okay.
And a putter, yeah.
Okay.
What was the other part of the question?
That's okay. So let's get your favorite practice drills for your short game with your wedges.
Beautiful. So I'm very blessed to be at Glen Arbor because we have 7 acres inside 100 yards.
Oh, wow.
It's fabulous. So I can create any type of shot out there from inside 100 yards. Hmm. And sometimes I can stretch it to 110. So what I'm doing is I'm just working on generally three different ball positions, with the three wedges, a forward, a middle, and a back. for each wedge.
Wait, when you say forward, middle, back, are you talking about in the position of your feet?
In your stance? In the position of my feet.
Yeah, yep, okay.
With each wedge, because that gives me a different ball flight, depending on where the ball is. It's going to come out a lot lower with a little different reaction when it's back in your stance as opposed to being forward in your stance. And while I do that, I also alter my grip. So if the ball goes back a little bit in my stance, I'll strengthen my grip up a little bit. If I'm playing, like, that'll be like a lower shot with a little spin on it, but a lower with some grab. And the middle will be nice and neutral with the grip. And then if I put the ball forward, I actually weaken my grip a little bit, and it actually hits the ball a little bit higher. So I get very proficient with seeing those trajectories come off those wedges with those three sort of ball positions and grip positions.
Do you have an in-between distance that you're going, yikes, that's not where I want to be right now?
Yeah, 65 yards out of a bunker.
Yeah, okay. Really? That's it? That's pretty universal, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, you want to become, you know, I just learned, you know, a long time ago, probably 10 years ago or so, that you have to be proficient inside 100 yards, and you've got to own your wedges. It's got to be like, you know, like brushing your teeth.
Yeah.
You just have to be good at it, and that's the most important part of the game, period. That and putting.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. This practice putting green that I've installed in my backyard, I'm lucky my yard is wide, not too deep, but it's wide. So I've got enough room to, practice a 15 and 20 yard shot.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just so excited about being able to do that and just want to do it with different ball flights, trying to keep it low, middle, high with different clubs. But I've got to really focus more on the ball position and my stance when I do these.
Yeah, and think about it. You're not, you know, the ball's not, your feet aren't super wide apart from each other when you're around the green like this, okay?
Yeah.
When you're hitting these little shots. So the ball position's not going to move a whole heck of a lot. Like you think of a driver, you know, stance being very wide, the ball position of your front foot versus your rear foot, there's like a huge, we're only talking about when your feet are close, when you hit a wedge shot, you know, a couple inches forward, middle, and back.
Okay.
You know, we're not talking like, you know, a foot or 2 feet. So, you know, you can really become, you know, proficient with your trajectories when your feet are closer together, because you're going to have less margin for error, you know, where you're going to hit the ground because your feet are closer together, right?
What's your favorite club?
My favorite club.
Oh, it hasn't arrived in the mail yet. You just ordered them.
Yeah, right. You know, probably my 52 degree. I made a shot a few years ago in 2012 hold out to get into the PGA Championship and out in the National Club Pro. And that's always become my favorite club, that 52 degree wedge. That's kind of like my go-to, my go-to. Yeah.
At any distance inside of what?
I'm really starting to push it when I start getting out to about 118, 119 yards.
Uh-huh.
If I'm hitting something that far, I'm going to put too much spin on it anyway, unless the conditions are, you know, extremely hard. Yeah, you know, no wind, then it starts, you know, moving into a pitching wedge. You know, start getting over 120, and I become pretty proficient with, you know, between that and 145.
And
with the pitching wedge. So.
What's the closest distance that you'll pull out that 52 degree?
Oh, I mean, it'll be right next to the green sometimes.
Do you putt
sometimes
with it?
30 yards.
No, I mean like
broken a putter to putt with it.
No. I mean like if you're off the green, you're close to the green, but you're not on it. And there's some, you know, there's some rough and a sprinkler head and stuff in between you and the green. You got to just get the ball onto the green low. Right. And then let it go.
I'll use a 58 or 52 or sometimes even a pitching wedge and blade that putt like you're telling me.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I have a nice square kind of square bottom edge on my 52, which is nice. So it's not too rounded. So it's easier to putt with. But yeah, definitely.
Awesome. You got a website too?
I do. RobLeBritz.com. Check it out if you want to, you know, find out where I'm located, any videos, get in touch with me, anything you need. There's going to be more videos coming, YouTube channel, Instagram. Check it all out if you're interested. Rob LeBritz Golf. It's fun. I travel all over the place, and I try not to post too much stuff, but I try to keep it current.
Okay, it's Rob Labritz Golf, and it's L-A-B as in boy, R-I-T-Z.
Yes, that's the Instagram. The website's just roblabritz.com.
Okay.
And then, you know, Twitter's at rlabritz.
Okay. Okay, good. Well, we'll follow you. I'm sure we're going to find some awesome stuff there. That is great. But I need, give me, so you've played in how many PGA championships?
So 5 PGA championships.
Wow. Amazing. Give me your favorite story. Give me a story.
Well, the story when I hold out to make it to Oak Hill was pretty special.
Yeah.
It was a month before my daughter was being born.
Wow.
My wife was in the hospital out when we were playing in the tournament. It was a really scary week, and to have that weekend with that shot, that was probably one of the most special times. But also a special time in a major sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Or an interaction with somebody, or like a wow moment or an aha moment that happened while you were out there.
I had a great match at Oak Hill with Keegan Bradley, Dustin Johnson, Jason Duffner.
Wow.
And that was pretty cool. That ended me losing a little bit of money and writing Duff a check because I didn't have the cash on me. And he ended up winning that year. And he sent the check back to me, which was very cool.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that was solid. He said put it towards diapers because that's when our daughter was just being born.
Oh,
so that was very cool.
Very cool. No, wait. So wait, this was during the PGA Championship you were the foursome, or was it a practice round?
Yeah, this was the practice round.
Oh, okay. So you didn't have any individual bets going on during the championship?
No. No, we never do that.
It's like, really?
No. Yeah, no. No.
Oh, man. Well, you've obviously have done a lot since the last time we talked. Congratulations. It's great to talk to you again. Thanks so much for checking in with me so I can invite you back on the show.
Fred, anytime. It's great to reach out to you. I love being on the show. Anytime you want to talk golf, I'm more than happy to do it with you. You got a great show, and keep it pumping. I love listening to it.
This week on our Golf Smarter Academy, young Dustin from Canada has a detailed question that I know would never come from me, because honestly, I don't even understand his question. Luckily, our Academy professor, Tony Manzotti, knows exactly what to do.
Hey, Tony. Hey, Fred. My name is Dustin. I'm 24, and I'm from Vancouver, BC. I just had a question about stance, attack angle, and a change in grip, possibly with my driver. Now, normally I keep a neutral grip on my clubs, maybe a hair weak. But with my driver, it's a little bit different because my current attack angle is actually very steep in regards to a driver, like maybe zero or plus one with a very upward mindset on a TrackMan. And I'm keeping my spine tilt and my back heel loaded at address, and then all my weight is on my front heel on the pivot. And I was just wondering if there's actually anything in my stance that I might change, or a swing plane thought to kind of get that up to a plus four, plus five, plus six for attack angle, and maybe take me away from such a weak grip. It actually feels a little bit unnatural, and maybe some tips or maybe even a drill. That'd be fantastic, Tony. I'd love to hear from you.
I heard your question, Dustin. It's kind of a tough one to answer, but I'll do my best. First of all, I wouldn't load up my right foot at address. I would try to center my weight, making sure that my right hip was on the instep of my right foot. That should balance you a little bit better. Secondly, if you're that steep with the driver, it means that you're starting down with the arms instead of rotating as your first move on the through swing. So I would work on getting myself a little bit more centered to the ball and making sure that on the downswing, the first move is a rotational move, which will pull the arms through impact to the left. Being steep is always something that we all fight, and it's because you know, the driver, we're always trying to hit the ball hard, and the first thing that happens is that we release the hands and arms towards the ball instead of rotating past the ball and letting the arms follow in what we call a lag position. I hope that helps you.
So clearly, no matter how detailed or complicated your concerns are about becoming a better golfer, we can get you answers. Please call our toll-free Golf Smarter Academy line at 415-761-1498 right now and leave your message. Not only will you get an answer on the podcast, you'll also get a free copy of Tony Manzoni's DVD, The Lost Fundamental, a Golf Smarter Academy diploma suitable for framing, and one of our new Golf Smarter ball markers. For all the information on our Golf Smarter Academy, go to golfsmarter.com/academy. Questions, comments, suggestions, use at Golf Smarter on Twitter or Instagram. Call our Academy line at 415-761-1498 or click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.